The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of the Katra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling, well, a really big one. A historical phenomenon that is constantly misused, often simplified, and remains deeply sensitive, the Crusades. Our mission today is to take Christopher Tyerman's, frankly, definitive work and give you a shortcut to understanding the real nature of what happened back then. We're trying to move past the, you know, the simple hero stories or the good versus evil stuff.
Exactly. We're going to show you that the Crusades weren't just one single thing, but this huge, kind of messy, evolving series of campaigns over centuries. And understanding that complexity, that messiness, is precisely why it's so important today. I mean, you see crusading history and imagery misused all the time now, right? By politicians, by extremists. It's everywhere. And if we just rely on these simple, sort of emotionally charged myths about the medieval period, we actually lose our ability to think critically about conflicts happening now. Tyerman really forces us to look at the multifaceted, often uncomfortable reality.
Right. And the guide for this, as you said, is Professor Christopher Tyerman. He's the professor of the history of the Crusades at Oxford. His authority comes from decades of really rigorous evidence-based research. But what makes his take different from, say, older histories?
Well, I think it's his focus on the unglamorous stuff, the reality on the ground. Older historians might focus heavily on the theology, maybe the grand political strategies. Tyerman covers that, absolutely. But he insists we have to bring in the social, the economic, and especially the logistical side.
Okay, so we're talking about the nuts and bolts, not just why they wanted to go, but how on earth they managed to, say, feed an army marching for years, how they paid for it all, that kind of thing.
Precisely that, yeah. He gets away from just the high politics and looks at the practical realities. His huge book, God's War, really tries to strip away all the layers of myth that have built up over centuries. He wants to show us the Crusades as they were actually experienced by the people living through, you know, the mud, the debt, the constant worry about supplies.
Okay, let's get to his main argument then, his central thesis. He says the Crusades weren't a simple holy war at all. Instead, they were this incredibly complex, evolving, sometimes chaotic phenomenon that was just deeply woven into everything in medieval Europe, religion, politics, society, the economy, kind of all interconnected.
Yeah, and it really kicked off with a kind of institutional invention. Tyerman points to Pope Urban II's callback in 1095, as this moment of, well, political and spiritual genius, really. You had medieval Europe dealing with tons of internal violence, knights fighting each other constantly, something the church was desperate to control. Mm. And people were also deeply worried about sin, about penance. So Urban II brilliantly fused these existing things, the need for penance and the existing culture of pilgrimage. He creates the armed pilgrimage. Basically, you get forgiveness for your sins, remission by going off to fight. It channeled all that knightly violence outwards.
Wow, that's a powerful idea, an armed pilgrimage.
And the key thing, I guess, is once that mechanism was invented, it turned out to be incredibly adaptable.
Hugely adaptable. Tyerman shows crusading wasn't just about fighting in the Holy Land. That same idea, that same spiritual reward system, got applied to the Reconquista in Spain against pagan groups in the Baltic during the pretty brutal Teutonic Crusades and even internally within Christendom itself.
So it became a tool of power as much as an expression of faith.
Absolutely. Let's trace those origins a bit. So 11th century Europe, you've got the papacy really trying to increase its authority, right? The Gregorian reform trying to assert spiritual power over kings and emperors.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're trying to stop local lords from constantly warring with each other. That was the whole peace and truce of God movement, trying to bring some order.
So the crusade becomes this almost perfect outlet, a spiritually approved way to redirect all that aggression outward.
Solve several problems at once, you could say.
But when that first crusade actually launched, the people who went weren't just driven by pure devotion, were they? Tyerman digs into that.
Oh, absolutely. He insists we see the full picture. Genuine piety, the desire for salvation, that was definitely central for many, maybe most. But it was layered with very powerful worldly ambitions, too. Social pressure back home, the lure of maybe getting land or riches in the East, mm-hmm. getting status. It was a potent mix.
And here's something from the book that really jumped out at me, because it cuts against the usual narrative of constant war. After Jerusalem was captured in 1099, which was, you know, a huge shock.
Yeah.
The crusader states they set up, Outremer, were apparently surprisingly complex societies, often quite pragmatic.
That's right. They weren't just fortresses under siege constantly. They were often multicultural places, engaging in trade, making alliances, sometimes quite peaceful coexistence with their Muslim and Jewish neighbors. It wasn't nonstop conflict.
But that pragmatism, maybe, eventually provoked a response.
It did. The Muslim world, which had been quite fragmented, started to unify in a kind of counter-crusade. Yeah. Most famously under Saladin. And just like the popes used the idea of armed pilgrimage, Saladin very effectively mobilized the ideology of jihad, which, interestingly, like the crusade, often had internal meanings before becoming this unified military force.
Okay, but if we need the ultimate example of how, well, money and logistics could completely trump religious ideals, we have to talk about the Fourth Crusade.
Right. Around 1202 to 1204, Tyerman uses this as a key case study.
It's absolutely central to his argument. This expedition was originally meant to go to Egypt, but the Crusaders were essentially broke. They owed this enormous sum to the Venetians just for the ships to get them there. So first, their lack of cash led them to attack and capture the Christian city of Zara on the Adriatic coast, basically as payment to the Venetians.
Wait, a Christian city just to pay off their shipping bill?
Yep, and it got worse. Then, through a whole series of political maneuvers and financial incentives, they ended up completely diverted. And the ultimate betrayal? They sacked Constantinople, the capital of the Byzantine Empire, the greatest Christian city in the world at the time.
Unbelievable. So the need for money, the logistical problems, completely derailed the whole thing. They ended up destroying the very Eastern Christians they were, in theory, supposed to be helping or defending. Exactly. It shattered the ideal for many people. It showed how secular concerns, financial realities, could just completely overwhelm the supposed religious purpose. And while that ideal was maybe cracking overseas, the popes kept using the mechanism of crusading internally. Tyerman discusses the Albigensian Crusade in southern France against the Cathar heretics. This really cemented the idea that crusade was a flexible tool. It could be used for internal policing, for political expansion, for suppressing dissent within Europe itself, not just for wars far away.
Right. So moving into the 13th century, Tyerman describes the ideal sort of dying this slow, painful, and increasingly political death. A great example is the Sixth Crusade. This one was led by the Holy Roman Emperor, Frederick II. But the Pope had actually excommunicated Frederick. They were major political rivals.
Huge rivals. Yet Frederick II goes on crusade anyway, and he actually manages to regain Jerusalem.
Wow. So he achieved the goal.
He did. But here's the twist. He didn't do it through a massive battle. He did it through diplomacy. He negotiated a treaty with the Sultan of Egypt.
Okay, let me get this straight. He achieves the number one stated goal, getting Jerusalem back through negotiation. And the Pope's reaction is?
Condemnation. Basically, how dare you succeed without papal permission and through talking, not fighting. Because Frederick was a political enemy, his success, especially a diplomatic one, wasn't acceptable.
That's incredible. It really shows how political control had become maybe more important than the actual holy objective itself by that point.
It seems that way, yes.
And the whole era kind of peters out with these last big, genuinely pious efforts by King Louis IX of France Saint Louis. He launched two enormous crusades.
Yeah, huge undertakings. Yeah. Driven by incredible personal faith. But Tyerman shows that even with massive resources and genuine religious zeal, by the late 13th century, the strategic situation, the logistics, the sheer difficulty of projecting power that far, it just wasn't really feasible anymore. Both his crusades were catastrophic failures.
And then the final nail in the coffin for the Crusader states in the Levant was the fall of Acre in 1291. That ended the main European presence there after nearly 200 years.
It was the end of that particular chapter.
Okay, so if we boil down Tyerman's massive analysis, what are maybe the core lessons here? Things that apply even beyond the Middle Ages?
Well, I think there are a few key takeaways.
The first one has to be what we saw with the Fourth Crusade. Logistics are paramount. Seems obvious, maybe, but Tyerman really hammers it home. Grand strategies, noble ideas, intense religious belief. They often get decided by the really mundane, boring stuff. Money, supply lines, administration. Can you actually get the people there and feed them?
Yeah, absolutely fundamental. The second big one is about institutional innovation and control. The Crusade wasn't just a popular movement. It was an invention by the papacy, a tool they created to assert their authority, to try and direct the actions of kings and knights and shape the spiritual lives of ordinary Christians, declaring a crisis and offering a spiritual reward that's a powerful way to exert control.
And third, maybe the most important for understanding people, the complexity of motivation. Tyerman insists we never assume it was simple. Any big movement, medieval or modern, is usually driven by this messy mix. Genuine belief, ideology, sure, but almost always tangled up with practical self-interest, desire for land, for power, for money, for status. It's never just one thing.
That complexity is key.
And Tyerman's work gives us these really useful ways of thinking, these concepts to help analyze the past without just imposing our own modern values onto it.
Definitely. One of the most powerful ideas, I think, is about historical rationality. He argues the Crusades weren't really a conflict between, say, medieval superstition and modern rationality. He says it was a clash between different forms of rationality, each operating within its own cultural logic.
Right, so we can't just dismiss medieval people as irrational or fanatical. We have to try and understand their logic, which was based on things like penance, honor, salvation, the reality of God's judgment as they saw it. It made sense to them.
Exactly. We have to respect their framework to understand their actions. And this connects back to that reality versus ideal point. Tyerman's research constantly shows, you know, the success or failure of a particular crusade often had less to do with how zealous everyone was, and much more to do with the grim realities of raising cash, finding enough ships, securing food and water along the way. The balance sheet could be more important than the prayer book in the end.
And thirdly, he sees these disturbing modern echoes. He basically argues that the Crusades, quote, created the template for modern conflicts that combine religious rhetoric with political objectives.
Yeah, that's a really crucial link he draws. We still see it today, don't we? Conflicts where the underlying drivers might be political or economic, but they're justified and people are mobilized. Using the language of faith or identity or historical grievance, Crusades kind of set that pattern.
So how can we, listening to this, apply Tyerman's approach? Use it as a tool for thinking?
Well, I think the main thing is it teaches critical thinking through skepticism.
Mm.
The Crusades were incredibly messy, multi-layered, full of contradictions. So the lesson is, be really wary whenever someone presents you with a simple black and white explanation for any major conflict or social movement today. Assume it's more complicated.
That's a good point. And maybe it helps us analyze propaganda better, too. If you understand how religious ideology was used back then to mobilize people, sometimes for pretty brutal or self-serving ends, you can maybe get better at spotting similar patterns in modern political speech. You know, looking for that gap between the noble justification being presented and the possible underlying interests, economic or political.
Absolutely. And there's also the legacy of unintended consequences. Even failed movements, like many crusades were, can leave behind huge changes. The Crusades stimulated developments in European trade, taxation, state bureaucracy, naval technology, things the organizers never intended, but which reshaped society profoundly. Failures can be just as impactful as successes.
So, final takeaways. For me, what really stood out was reframing the Crusades, at least partly, as a tool for internal European management. The idea that it was a system designed to control and organize Europe's own violent warrior class, and the Holy Land was just one, albeit the most famous place to direct them, that changes how you see it.
Mm, that's a powerful way to put it. And for me, the final takeaway is really about embracing that complexity Tyerman reveals, understanding the messy reality of human motivation in the past, the mix of faith and greed, idealism and brutality. That understanding is the best antidote we have against people who want to simplify and weaponize that same history today. And maybe a final thought to leave people with. If the Crusades show us repeatedly how grand ideological goals can be completely scuppered by ignoring basic financial and logistical facts, well, what big, expensive political or social projects today might be most at risk of failing simply because someone hasn't looked closely enough at the budget or the supply chains? Something to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.